Thank you, Paul.
Good evening, everyone. So, as Paul said, our subject is how can we learn from the Chronicles genealogies? And it's a relevant question, an important question for us to consider. I imagine that at the end of, well, getting on toward the end of the year every year, we put a list on the back of subjects that people would like to see covered for Bible class. And I expect this is perhaps one that was put on there, because it's a question we have, and it's an important one for us to look at this evening, and it's fallen to me to do that. So how can we learn from these genealogies? Well, I guess the question is framed in a way that's referring to a verse, isn't it? And if just turn first of all to Romans chapter 15, please. We're told here something important, something which is relevant for what we're going to consider this evening. So Romans 15, and we just want to take really verse 4. It says, "For whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our learning, that we through patience and comfort of the Scriptures might have hope." So there's that idea that things that have been written in the past are there for us to learn from. And just in connection with this, we don't need to turn there, we can think forward to 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 16, that Scripture is there for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction in righteousness. So when we come to Chronicles, and we're presented with a chapter which is, you know, mostly just a list of names, maybe one or two details, it's a fair question to ask, well, how can we learn from these things? So just turn back to Chronicles. That's where we're going to base most of our thoughts, of course, so it might be wise to put a marker in there if you haven't already. I was very pleased when I had this subject to have been told about this book, which is called Family Trees of the Tribes of Israel. So much of what I'm going to refer to this evening will have come from here. You're very welcome to borrow it, take it, if you wish. It's very detailed, there's lots and lots of detail in here, much of which I won't even scratch this evening. But that's where quite a lot of what I'm going to say has come from, so you're very welcome if that takes your interest to have a look at that a little later on. So, in Chronicles then, we have these genealogies, and we've got to consider, well, the Scriptures, they've been written for our learning, but is it true that primarily the Chronicles record has been written for us? And I'd suggest that we are not the prime audience for the genealogies in Chronicles. I've asked you to come back there, but actually we want to go and have a look at Ezra chapter 2, please. Because these Chronicles that have been left on record were of use as soon as they were written. We've just considered in our reading all the singers and those that are involved with the Levites, okay, and we know about those, and the people of Israel know about those, because those things were written down. So let's have a look at Ezra chapter 2, and we'll see here that these chronicles, these genealogies, were used very, very soon after they would have been written. So Ezra chapter 2, and we need to have a look at verse 62. Well, let's come to verse 61. "And the children of the priests, the children of Habaiah, the children of Koz, the children of Barzillai, which took a wife of the daughters of Barzillai the Gileadite, and were called after their name, these sought their register among those that were reckoned by genealogy, but they were not found. Therefore were they as polluted, put from the priesthood." So there's an instance where these chronicles have been recorded, these lists of families have been recorded, and they've been used to make a decision, to decide, actually, you know, you can't serve in this particular way because your name isn't there. So, yes, they're recorded, and so we can read them, but we're perhaps not the target audience for them. As we're reading through, we might find that we come across names or places that we recognise. And that's a good thing, isn't it, that we can be reading through a list and names we don't recognise, and then we think, oh, we come across perhaps a David or a Saul or a king that we recognise. So They can help us to recall different incidents that have taken place. They might help us to recall people we've forgotten about. People that we thought, oh, yeah, I've not thought about that particular person for a long time. Let's go and remind ourselves what they have done. But ultimately, God has recorded this. And it's God that's chosen who is in there and who isn't going to be in there. And so this is the record that God has given to us. And it may be one day, God willing, that we will meet someone who is found in 1 Chronicles chapter 4, verse 17, whose name we might have read, 50, 60 times in our lifetime and not taken any notice of. But, one day, God willing, we might meet that person. So that's just an interesting thought for us. And not a scriptural point at all. Really good to learn to read using genealogies for children. Okay, all those names they've got to learn to sound out. Okay, probably take them a long time, but if they can learn to break down sounds, then fantastic. So if you're teaching children to read, take them to Chronicles. They'll enjoy it. So when was it written? Well, it's suggested that it was written at the end of, at the end of the exile in Babylon. And one of the suggested authors of it is Ezra, but we've got no real concrete evidence for that at all. That's just someone that suggests it. And it covers a period of about 3,500 years. Just come back to 1 Chronicles chapter 1 and verse 1, and it starts for us right in the beginning. Adam, Seth, Enoch. And so we're told there that it begins with Adam, the first man. And then we carry on and we meet some recognisable figures for us. So verse 4, Noah, Shem, Ham, Japheth. Later on in the chapter we have verse 28, for example, Abraham, Isaac, Ishmael. So all these people that we have their lives expanded on much more elsewhere are in these genealogies here. And it brings us to the end of the captivity. Just have a look at chapter 3 and verse 19, and there will be another familiar name there for us. 1 Chronicles 3 verse 19, and the sons of Pedaiah were Zerubbabel, Shimei, and the sons of Zerubbabel, Meshullam and Hananiah, and Shalomith their sister. And you'll recognise Zerubbabel there as one of those that came back from the captivity in Babylon. This might be my only question for this evening. Can anyone tell me who Zerubbabel was the son of without looking in this genealogy? Okay, so yeah, we're told in Ezra that he was the son of Shealtiel, but actually when we look at this particular genealogy, he's not described as the son of Shealtiel at all. He's described as the son of Pedaiah. And so that presents us with some of the problems that we have in understanding or reading Chronicles. Now, if you have a look a little bit earlier on, verse 17, the sons of Jeconiah, Asir, Salathiel, his son, then I've got a little note in my margin that tells me that that is Shealtiel. So actually, although he's described in Ezra as being the son of Shealtiel, he wasn't the son of Shealtiel, he was just a descendant. So sometimes when we're reading in the genealogies and we find that word son of, it doesn't necessarily mean direct son of, it might be referring to one of their descendants. So that's one problem we might come across when we're trying to look at Chronicles. Another one is that you get the same people that we see elsewhere in Scripture referred to as a different name. So one example is Achan, that we know of from Joshua, is referred to as Achar in the genealogies. And we also have the problem of people that are, have names that are also the names of places. So we've got to read carefully to make sure that when we're reading, we're understanding whether we're talking about a place sometimes or whether we're talking about a name. We've got to read with care, otherwise those things are going to be missed. So how can we learn from the Chronicles genealogies? Well, a lot of it is reading carefully, make sure we are reading them so we can understand exactly what's going on. Now generally, well, no, it is true, that the Chronicles gives us the line of the seed. Just have a look again in Chronicles 1, verse 1. It's Adam, Seth, Enosh. So it's not necessarily done by the firstborn, because we know, well, we understand from Genesis that Cain was the firstborn. But it's not Cain that the Bible takes interest in. It's, of course, the seed. Verse 28, we've already referred to this, the sons of Abraham, Isaac and Ishmael. Well, we know that Ishmael was born before Isaac, but it chooses in the genealogy to put Isaac first. But then, to show that that's not always the case, verse 34, the sons of Isaac are Esau and Israel. So that's then listed in, not in the order in which, of the seed, or the chosen seed. So there's no, it doesn't seem to be a hard and fast rule there, but we do find out that it goes on to deal with the people of Israel, God's chosen people. Right, chapter 1, verse 35, we find mention of Midian. It's not 35, it's 2, I can't write. Okay, chapter 1, verse 32. Now the sons of Keturah, Abraham's concubine, she bears Zimram and Jokshan, and Medan and Midian, and Ishbak and Shua, and the sons of Jokshan, Sheba and Dedan, and the sons of Midian, Ephah, and Henoch, and Abida, and Aldeah. All these are the sons of Keturah. And you can see here that we've got a link between Abraham and Midian. So we know that when Moses fled from Egypt, he chose to go to Midian. And so it's likely, it seems, that there was some sort of connection or family connection between Moses and Midian, but also a connection of religion. It's possible that those things that Abraham believed, Midian would also have believed, or those in Midian would also have believed. But then when we come to chapters 2 down to chapter 9, or chapter 8 or chapter 9, we then move on to deal with the children of Israel. So verse 34, we've already read, Abraham begat Isaac, the sons of Isaac, Esau and Israel. And then chapter 2 verse 1, these are the sons of Israel. Now, the sons of Israel don't get an equal amount of things written about them. There's lots written about the tribe of Judah. That takes from chapter 2, verse 3 to 5, verse 26. The tribe of Levi takes up chapter 6. Simeon gets a section within 1 Chronicles 4. Reuben, a section in 1 Chronicles 5, as does Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh. And then chapter 7 tells us about the tribes of Benjamin, Ephraim, Issachar, Asher and Naphtali. Interesting to note that two tribes are not dealt with, Dan and Zebulun. And people might like to discuss that in the comments afterwards. Okay, so what I plan to do is go look through the tribes in roughly the order of how much we're told about them. So we're going to start with the tribe of Judah, and we have more information about Judah than we have about anyone else. Just have a look, please. We'll have a look in chapter 3. And this, of course, was the line of the Messiah. This was where David and then also Jesus was to come from. And there will be some familiar names in there to us, of course, because this was the kingly line. If you have a look in verse 10, for example, Solomon's son Rehoboam, his son Abiah his son, Asa his son, Jehoshaphat his son. So there's one of those occasions where we might have a list of names and, oh yes, we recognise these particular people. So amongst the tribe of Judah, and this is where it might get a bit bitty because I've just been choosing bits and pieces from here and there as I found them interesting. We want to go to chapter 4. And here we're told of the people of, or the sons of Ezra. So verse 17 of chapter 4, the sons of Ezra were Jetha and Mered and Ephah and Jalon, and she begat Sheber Miriam and Shammai and Ishba, the father of Eshtemoah. And his wife Jehudijah bare Jered, the father of Gedor, Heber, the father of Soko, Jekuthiel, the father of Zanoah. And these are the sons of Bithia, the daughter of Pharaoh, which Mered took. So, you know, of all these hundreds, maybe thousands of names we've got within Chronicles, here we've got someone picked out, and we've got a little bit of detail about them here, and it's Bithia, who is the daughter of Pharaoh. Well, why is it? Why would that bit of information be picked out? Well, it's possible that would have been the daughter of Pharaoh that came down and found Moses amongst the bulrushes. We're not told any more of that. It's just possible to line up from the genealogies of when these things happened. So, you know, we've got there a little snippet of information which we might be able to link to another section of scripture. Also, we've got links with David and Ahithophel and Uriah. Now, we know that Ahithophel was David's familiar friend, as he's described. Let's just go and have a look at the incident that we're talking about. So let's go and have a look at 2 Samuel chapter 3, please. I didn't mean that, I meant 2 Samuel chapter 11, verse 3. Okay, so 2 Samuel 11, verse 3, and David sent and inquired after the woman, and one said, is not this Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah, the Hittite? So we've got there sort of a mini genealogy, and so we've got one that is Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah, the Hittite. Now, if we, hopefully you kept a finger in there, Chronicles, 1 Chronicles chapter 3 this time. Verse 5, and this is talking about the wives of David. These were born unto him in Jerusalem, Shimeah, well, these are the children of David through his wives. These were born unto him in Jerusalem, Shimeah and Shobab and Nathan and Solomon 4, of Bathsheba, the daughter of Amiel. So we can see a little tie up there between what we've just read in Samuel and what we can see here in Chronicles. Well, what's this got to do with Ahithophel? Where does he come into this? Well, the suggestion is, or we know, that Ahithophel was the grandfather of Bathsheba. Let's have a look this time at 2 Samuel chapter 23. So 2 Samuel chapter 23 and verse 34. Eliphelet, the son of Ahaspi, the son of the Maachathite, Eliam, the son of Ahithophel, the Gilonite. So there we've got the father and then the grandfather Ahithophel of Bathsheba mentioned there for us. And we know, don't we, that after the incident with Bathsheba, that Ahithophel turns against David. Just to show that, let's have a look in chapter 15 and at verse 12. So chapter 15, verse 12, and Absalom sent for Ahithophel the Gilonite, David's counsellor, from his city, even from Gilo, when he offered sacrifices. And the conspiracy was strong, for the people increased continually with Absalom. So we've got there Ahithophel turning away from being David's counsellor and siding with Absalom. And the suggestion is that as Bathsheba's grandfather, he had taken against David. And then in Psalm 41 verse 9, where it's recorded of Ahithophel that he was David's familiar friend who rose up against him. Right, next one's have a look at the link between Bethlehem and Ephrata. So that's found in 1 Chronicles chapter 2, and this time verse 19. So 2 Chronicles chapter 2 verse 19, and when Azubah was dead, Caleb took unto him Ephrath, which bare him Hur. So there we've got Caleb taking a wife, and the name of his wife was Ephrath. No? Yeah, sorry, his name of his wife was Ephrath. And then we need to have a look later on in the chapter, verse 51, or coming at verse 50. These were the sons of Caleb, the son of Hur, so who we've just been thinking about. The firstborn of Ephratah, Shobal, the father of Kirjath-Jearim, Salma, the father of Bethlehem, and Hareth, the father of Beth-Gader. So there we've got Ephratah mentioned in verse 50, and then Bethlehem mentioned a little bit later in verse 51. So we've got these two names linked together. Well, sometimes it's hard to know which came first, whether the individual came first and the town was named after them, or whether you have the town came first and the individual named after them. I'm not, have I said the same thing twice? No, I'm not, I've confused myself. Let's just go and have a look where these names first appear together. Genesis chapter 35, please. So Genesis 35, and just at verse 19. And Rachel died and was buried in the way to Ephrath, which is Bethlehem. So we can see there the two names linked, but they're not quite called the same thing together. They're not called Bethlehem Ephratah. But we know that later on that was the name of the place, because, of course, we have that wonderful prophecy in Micah where these two names are linked together. It's Micah chapter 5 and verse 2. Micah chapter 5 verse 2, but thou, Bethlehem Ephratah, though thou be little among the thousands of Judah, yet out of thee shall he come forth unto me that is to be ruler in Israel, whose goings forth have been from old, from everlasting. So, a prophecy which may be familiar to us, but you can see that how reading through the genealogy and Chronicles, you can see where these two names start to be linked together. And so, and that's a benefit of reading it, is that it can trigger off thoughts that can lead us to wonderful prophecies like these. That's all I'm going to say about Judah for now. There's an awful lot more that's in there. But now we're going to move on to consider the tribe of Levi, and that mostly is contained in the First of Chronicles and chapter 6. And that's the second most commented on tribe, I suppose, or the second greatest amount of information after the tribe of Judah. So, 1 Chronicles chapter 6, of course, we have here the sons of Levi, Gershon, Kohath, and Merari. And so these names will be very familiar to us from the wilderness wanderings. And so when we look down to verse 3, for example, the children of Amram, Aaron and Moses and Miriam, the sons also of Aaron, Nadab, Abihu, Eleazar, Ithamar. So all names that we're extremely familiar with from both being in Egypt and the time of the wilderness wanderings. Now, spend a few minutes now looking at the length of time that Israel were in Egypt for, because you can see here that it's quite short, the genealogy that you get from Levi, and then who went down into Egypt, and then Moses, who left Egypt. And so we're just going to take a couple of references to sort of give us a rough idea, or to show actually how short that time was that they were in Egypt for. So first of all, let's have a look, please, at Genesis chapter 46. So Genesis 46, and here we're told about Levi and Kohath. So verse 8. These are the names of the children of Israel which came into Egypt: Jacob and his sons, Reuben, Jacob's firstborn, and the sons of Reuben, Hanok and Phallu and Hezron and Carmi, the sons of Simeon, Jemuel and Jamin and Ohad and Jachin and Zohar, and Shaul the son of a Canaanitish woman. And the sons of Levi, Gershon, Kohath, and Merari. So we're told there that it was those people that went down into Egypt. So we know from that that they must have been born in the land of Canaan. Next we want to have a look at Numbers chapter 26, please. And here we'll see a continuation of the line of Levi. So, Numbers chapter 26, verse 58. These are the families of the Levites: the family of the Libnites, the family of the Hebronites, the family of the Mahlites, the family of the Mushites, the family of the Korathites, and Kohath begat Amram. So, we saw that Levi had Kohath, and then here we find that Kohath begat Amram. So, that's the next line in, or next person in line in the genealogy. Verse 59, the name of Amram's wife was Jochebed, the daughter of Levi, whom her mother bare to Levi in Egypt. And she bare unto Amram Aaron and Moses and Miriam their sister. So you've got quite a short list there, or a short line, going from Levi to Kohath to Amram and then on to Moses. And so it doesn't give us very long for the people to be in Egypt for. And we know that Moses was only, well, I say only 80. Moses was 80 when he left. So the suggestion is that it was roughly about 200 years that they were there for. I'm just going to find a page in here which I'll read out to you, because it tells us about a chap in Saudi Arabia who managed to have an awful lot of children in a short space of time. If you just bear with me while I find the page. And I'm going to be reading this because I think it links with what we were looking at last week, with what Jonathan was looking at and the amount of children that might have been around for Cain to marry. Right. The following extracts from an article in magazine Time about the ruling house of Saudi Arabia are interesting and relevant to this connection. So this is showing how, although they were not in Egypt for very long, they could still have been a massive group of people. So it's the world's largest royal family. It includes an estimated 5,000 princes. Its female members are quite literally uncounted. The House of Saud had a powerful revival at the beginning of the 20th century when its leader, the great Abdul Aziz, generally known as something else, he died in 1953 at the age of 73, has been succeeded by his sons. If Saudi Arabia is underpopulated today, it is not the fault of Abdul Aziz and his descendants. The old lion, as he is described here, begat 44 sons and an unknown number of daughters. Saud had 52 sons and 54 daughters. All told, it is estimated that at least 2,000 Saudi princes, including sons, grandsons and great-grandsons, are descended from Abdul Aziz. So, in a very, very short space of time, so a man born about 100 years ago and died aged 73, who's got 2,000 male descendants alive today. So you can see how quickly a group of people can grow. And of course, we've got to remember that children of Israel, while they were in Egypt, it wasn't just natural, it was God blessing them with great population growth. So we shouldn't be surprised when we see the massive amount of people that we're to understand that came out of Egypt. There was plenty of time for that to happen, and of course God was blessing what was going on. Okay, back in Chronicles, chapter 6. And it's not only names that we get, well, they are names, but they're names of places. Again, it's reading carefully. If we're just reading and not sort of taking in what we're talking about, it might be that you just sort of read the list and not really understand what's going on. But at the end of chapter 6 of Chronicles, you get the list of Levitical cities. So, 1 Chronicles chapter 6, verse 54, and the children of Israel gave to the Levites these cities by their suburbs. And so it goes on to list the tribe and then the cities that were given with them. So, for example, verse 74, out of the tribe of Asher, Mashal with her suburbs, and Abdon with her suburbs. And so it carries on. And so what's happening there is we're being given more detail about a command that was given in the wilderness. I'm just going to read to you from Numbers 18, verse 21. No need necessarily for you to turn there. Numbers 18, verse 21, and behold, I have given the children of Levi all the tents in Israel for an inheritance, for their service which they serve, even the service of the tabernacle of the congregation. So they weren't given specific places in Israel like the rest of the tribes were. Theirs was to be given from amongst the tribes of their brethren. And here we can see that being brought out for us in Chronicles. Okay. Simeon is the next tribe that we're going to take a look at. The information here about Simeon comes in 1 Chronicles chapter 4, between the verses 24 and 43. And again, it's not just a list of names that we're given. Here we're given a bit of interesting detail for us to consider, and perhaps some exhortation for us here as well. So, you have 13 princes mentioned from verses 34 through to verse 37, and we're told that they went and did something, so a rare bit of narrative in the record. Verse 39, and they went to the entrance of Gedor, even unto the east side of the valley, to seek pasture for their flocks. And they found fat pasture and good, and the land was wide and quiet and peaceable, for they of Ham dwelt there of old. So there were some people who had been left in the land, the descendants of Ham, and they had dwelt there for a long time. Verse 41, and these, written by name, came in the days of Hezekiah king of Judah, and smote their tents and the habitations that were found there, and destroyed them utterly unto this day, and dwelt in their rooms, because there was pasture for their flocks. So you've got these described as princes who go down to Gedor and kick out the people, the inhabitants, or the descendants of Ham who were currently living there. Now it's probable that these people should have been removed a long, long time ago. If we think back to the time of the Judges, we read about all the places where the Canaanites were failed to be driven out. And so it's not until this point that we see that those descendants of Simeon go and actually finish this job of removing some of the people from the land. And then, just carrying on verse 42, and some of them, even of the sons of Simeon, 500 men, went to Mount Seir, having for their captains Pelatiah and Neariah and Rephaiah and Uziel, the sons of Ishi, and they smote the rest of the Amalekites that were escaped, and dwelt there unto this day. So again, we've got another group, and they go off and they destroy some of the Amalekites. And again, I think this is something that should have been done before. And it's interesting to note this takes place in the time of Hezekiah, which was a time of spiritual revival within Israel. So perhaps they thought, well, you know, we need to finish the job that should have been done a long time ago. It's interesting, the phrase that's used in verse 43, the rest of the Amalekites that were escaped. You might have, let me just make sure I'm getting the right verse here. Let's look at 1 Samuel chapter 30. And we'll see as a suggestion that these are possibly a group of people that we've heard of before. So we're at the time of David. 1 Samuel 30, verse 16. And when he had brought him down, behold, they were spread abroad upon all the earth, eating and drinking and dancing, because of all the great spoil that they had taken after the land of the Philistines and after the land of Judah. And David smote them from the twilight, even to the evening of the next day, and there escaped not a man of them, save 400 young men, which rode upon camels and fled. And David recovered all that the Amalekites had carried away, and David rescued his two wives. So the suggestion is that the people that had escaped here at the time of David are these ones that we find at the time of Hezekiah, who Simeon's descendants destroyed, those that were escaped. And so we can see that although God's will was not initially done through the people of Israel, ultimately it was. Right. We then, that's Simeon, we then get mention of the tribes that are on the east side of Jordan. So Reuben, Gad, and the half tribe of Manasseh. Reuben, verse 1, now the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, for he was the firstborn, but for as much as he defiled his father's bed, his birthright was given unto the sons of Joseph, the son of Israel, and the genealogy is not to be reckoned after the birthright. And so we've got here mention again of that detail concerning Reuben and how he slept with his father's concubine. And so the birthright was removed from him. Verse 2, for Judah prevailed above his brethren and became the chief ruler, but the birthright was Joseph. So Joseph took the birthright, but we see that Judah became the chief ruler. But what a thing that must have been for the family of the Reubenites to have to live with. The fact that they could have been the chosen tribe, they could have been the firstborn, but because of their forefathers' indiscretion, it was taken away from them. And so, as I've already referred to, verse 2, Judah prevailed above his brethren, and out of him came the chief ruler. Which, in the first instance, no doubt referred to David, but of course, later on, it refers to Jesus. And like we've just seen with Simeon, there were still some raids going on later on. Verse 18 of chapter 5, the sons of Reuben and the Gadites and the half-tribe of Manasseh of valiant men, men able to bear buckler and sword and shoot with bow and skillful in war, were 440,703 that went out to war. Verse 20, and they were helped against them, and the Hagarites were delivered into their hand, and all that were with him, for they cried to God in the battle, and he was entreated of them, because they put their trust in him. So here we've got an example of a bit of faith amongst these names, that these people were crying unto God for help in battle. And so they were still trying to carry out God's work. But unfortunately, we know that that didn't last. They were the first ones, it seems, to go into captivity. Have a look at verse 25. And they transgressed against the God of their fathers and went a-whoring after the gods of the people of the land whom God destroyed before them. And the God of Israel stirred up the spirit of Pul, king of Assyria, and the spirit of Tilgath-Pilneser, king of Assyria, and he carried them away, even the Reubenites and the Gadites and the half-tribe of Manasseh, and brought them unto Halah and Habor and Hara, and to the river Gozan, unto this day. So although we saw a little bit of faith there earlier on, ultimately those tribes were taken away into captivity before the other tribes. Right, these last few tribes that we're going to mention, there's not a lot said about them at all. Just the tribe of Manasseh, which we find in 1 Chronicles chapter 7. Notable really because of the daughters of Zelophehad. Verse 15, Machir took to wife the sister of Huppim and Shuppim, whose sister's name was Maacah, and the name of the second was Zelophehad, and Zelophehad had daughters. So again, there we've just got a little mention of a character who we have referred to elsewhere. And so as we're reading through, we can be thinking, oh yeah, Zelophehad, what do we know about him, and what can we learn from that? Alright, next we're going to consider the tribe of Benjamin. Now, Benjamin is quite mixed up in the record. You've sort of got three different sections which include his genealogies. So it comes in 1 Chronicles chapter 8, you get a section, and then 1 Chronicles 9, verse 35 to 44, and that's actually a repetition of what we find in 1 Chronicles 8. But just in relation to the family of Benjamin, I want to have a look at Esther, please. Esther chapter 2. Esther chapter 2, and here we are with Mordecai, or Mordecai. Esther 2 verse 5, now, in Shushan the palace, there was a certain Jew, whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, a Benjamite. So again, we get a little mini genealogy, and we can see here we're looking at the tribe of Benjamin. Well, why is that relevant? Well, it seems that he had something to do with the house of Saul. So for example, there you've got the fact that Shimei was a son of Kish, and we know that Saul also was a son of Kish. But who was the adversary of Mordecai? Well, it was Haman the Agagite. And the interest or the link comes because it was Saul who was told to utterly destroy the Amalekites, the king of whom was Agag. And so if Saul had carried out his duties as he should have done, perhaps then Mordecai, later on, many years later, would have not been having the problem with Haman, who was the Agagite. So, just again, another link there between the different records. Right. We've already mentioned the fact that Dan and Zebulun are missing from these records in Chronicles. Dan is also missing in Revelation. I'm sure someone will have something to say about that in the comments afterwards. So finally, in Chronicles, in chapter 9, we are left with the genealogy of Saul. Why does it leave us in this particular way? Well, it's because the narrative, when it's picked up in chapter 10, starts to deal with the life, well, very much the end of the life of Saul, and then with the life of David. So 1 Chronicles chapter 9, verse 39, and there begat Kish, and Kish begat Saul, and Saul begat Jonathan, and so we have all those other names. And it's interesting, isn't it? Having said that, when we're reading through, we tend to skip over the names. That's exactly what I've done this evening. I've picked on the names that I recognise, and then said, and then there's some others as well. So, sorry about that. But then when we go into chapter 10, we find that we're then dealing with Saul. So we've had all those genealogies. We started with Adam way back in chapter 1, verse 1. It's led us through. Okay, and now it's taking us to the time of Saul. And so that's where I'm going to leave what can we learn or how can we learn from the Chronicles genealogies. Hopefully there's been something of interest to you in there. There is an awful lot of links that can be made. But that doesn't come from a skim read. Brother Tony Benson, who wrote this, he must have devoted years of his life to understanding and working out all the links between the genealogies. So, if that's your kind of thing, then take a look at this, because it's very interesting, but it doesn't come from a quick skim read. So if we want to learn from the Chronicles genealogies, then we've actually got to read them and try and follow up on perhaps those connections that we make in our heads that we may not bother to go and search out later on. And the focus tends to be on facts, doesn't it? We haven't discussed any doctrinal things this evening. So yes, we can learn from them, but it tends to be facts that we can learn, or links that corroborate other parts of Scripture rather than anything doctrinal. And it can add bits of detail to things that we look at elsewhere. But hopefully there's been something there of interest to you, and I look forward to your comments that you can tell me more about afterwards.